every level, at every aspect of the criminal justice system.
Naoli Mel Davis, I want to thank you for being with us, attorney for the family of 24-year-old Chandre Delmore, who died Sunday after he was found unresponsive in his Fulton County jail cell after spending 5 months there. Delmore is the 10th person to this year to die in custody of the Fulton County Sheriff's Office. That does it for our show. To see our podcast, video and audio podcasts, or sign up for our news, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
KABU Community Radio is hiring a full-time development director. This position leads all fundraising campaigns in alignment with KABU's mission, goals, and policies. The development director works closely with management and staff to identify funding priorities and create major donor campaigns, capital campaigns, and grant writing. More info can be found at kabu.fm/hiring. We will begin reviewing applications on August 7th, and the position will remain open until filled. KABU is an equal opportunity employer.
Your cheating heart will make you weep.
September 17th is the 100th anniversary of the birth of Hank Williams Sr., one of the finest singer-songwriters this country has ever produced. KBO Swingin' Country is celebrating this event by dedicating an entire broadcast to the music of Hank Williams. Tune in to KBO Swingin' Country on Saturday, September 30th from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. for 3 hours of all things Hank Williams considered. We'll have songs sung by Hank, songs written by Hank, and songs about Hank. You don't want to miss it. Once again, that is Saturday, September 30th. From 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. on KBO.FM or 90.7 FM in the Portland area. Son of a gun, we'll have some fun.
The sweetest one, me, oh my, oh. Son of a gun, we'll have big fun on the bayou.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. And up next, the KABU News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KABU Evening News.
Coming up on the KABU Evening News, the upcoming hearing on Oregon's gun control measure 114 will only consider the text of the law, not its potential effects.
The Georgia grand jury who indicted Trump and 18 others also considered indicting 3 U.S. senators.
And Magic Tavern dancers unanimously vote to unionize, becoming the second unionized strip club in the U.S.
Good evening. This is the KABU Evening News for Friday, September 8th, 2023. I'm Alex Solomon.
And I'm Josh Salem. The judge in the lawsuit against gun control measure 114 says the trial will only address the question of whether the law is constitutional as written. That's opposed to an initial request by plaintiffs to include how it might be put into practice in the future. Oregon voters passed measure 114 in November of 2022. It would ban the manufacture, purchase, or sale of magazines that can hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition. It also requires people to take a safety course and pass a background check to get a permit before buying a gun. The law was challenged in federal court and in circuit court in Harney County, where this case is scheduled to begin on September 18th. The federal judge in that challenge said the law was consistent with others throughout American history regulating weapons, so it doesn't violate the Second Amendment. Harney County Circuit Judge Robert Ratio put a hold on the law last December after a legal complaint from 2 Harney County residents and 2 pro-gun groups. Those 2 groups have since dropped out of the lawsuit. On September 18th, the case will solely concern whether the law, as written, violates the state constitution. The judge won't consider how it could be put into practice in the future. Judge Ratio said, quote, "I'm just not going to guess what the program's going to look like," End quote.
In Fulton County, Georgia, a special grand jury recommended racketeering and conspiracy charges against former President Donald Trump and 18 of his allies. That case is set to go forward in March of next year. But a new report shows that's not all they recommended. The special grand jury also voted to charge Senator Lindsey Graham and former Georgia Senators David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler. Prosecutors decided not to indict them for their involvement in the attempts to reverse the 2020 election results in Georgia. Senator Graham had called Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger to ask whether certain postal ballots could be thrown out. One of those Trump allies who was indicted, White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, requested to move his Georgia criminal case to federal court. That request was denied by a judge. His lawyers were angling to invoke federal immunity if the case got moved, but that's no longer on the table. It's a poor sign for the other defendants hoping to move their cases to federal court, too. All the while, House Judiciary Chair Jim Jordan attempted to interfere in Fulton County DA Fannie Willis's case, demanding she turn over all her documents to him in the case. In a response letter, she wrote that his request violated Georgia's sovereignty and that he had no basis for the demand. She also wrote that Jordan needed to face the reality and that, quote, those who wish to avoid felony charges in Fulton County, Georgia, should not commit felonies in Fulton County, Georgia, end quote.
A lawsuit has been filed to remove former President Donald Trump from Colorado's presidential primary ballot. While many legal scholars feel the former president should be removed based on the Constitution's 14th Amendment, it's uncertain how this lawsuit will proceed. Edwin J. Vieira has the story.
A Colorado lawsuit getting lots of national attention aims to remove former President Donald Trump from the state's presidential primary ballot. The group Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CREW, is looking to remove the former president, citing Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. This post-Civil War language says anyone who took an oath to support the U.S. Constitution and then engages in rebellion or insurrection should be disqualified from holding office. CREW's chief counsel, Donald Sherman, describes how the former president's other trials could impact this case in particular.
The former president's conviction in any one of the many criminal trials that he is facing, but especially the Georgia case and the Jack Smith case related to January 6th, could bolster the already overwhelming public case against the former president.
He adds a criminal conviction isn't required for a person to be disqualified under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Trump has said there is no basis for this legal theory to be used, but in August, a paper was written by members of the Conservative Federalist Society saying the former president could be disqualified through the 14th Amendment. Based on this, Sherman notes other elected officials who took part in the January 6th insurrection could also be removed from office in this manner. A lawsuit filed by CREW led a judge to remove Coy Griffin, a former Otero County, New Mexico commissioner, from office for participating in January 6th. Sherman notes it could be a precedent.
The case certainly should be considered persuasive in any future disqualification cases against the former president. It is the first court case where a judge determined as a matter of law that January 6th was an insurrection.
Sherman hopes the lawsuit ultimately leads to accountability for all elected officials who were part of the insurrection. He adds it isn't about partisanship or ideological differences, but is based on how numerous legal scholars have interpreted the 14th Amendment and found that Section 3 could be used to disqualify the former president. This is Edwin J. Vieira for Colorado News Connection.
The first Portland Area Detox Center funded by Measure 110 will open in the next 2 weeks. RecoverWorks Northwest is opening a new facility in southeast Portland that will focus on fentanyl addiction. It will offer medically managed detox by referral or appointment. Medically managed withdrawal takes between 3 to 5 days. The center will have 16 beds, mostly for those who need to withdraw from fentanyl, and is expected to serve 1,200 patients a year. Douglas Oglesby is a drug and alcohol counselor for Clackamas County. Oglesby told Portland Mercury, quote, detox gets you so at least thinking right. Once someone gets clean from that, then you can see if they're ready for residential treatment, end quote. Measure 110 was passed in November 2020 with the intention to treat drug addiction as a public health problem instead of as a criminal problem. The rollout has been widely criticized since the drug decriminalization aspect of the bill started before new funds for addiction treatment were dispersed. The new Foster Road Detox Center is expected to fill in a gap in services. It's also one of the only detox centers that accepts Oregon Health Plan patients.
Portland's Magic Tavern becomes the second strip club in the nation to unionize. Dancers voted unanimously to unionize with the Actors' Equity Association on Thursday. This follows a months-long strike led by strippers in response to unsafe working conditions at the club. The dancers went on strike on April 4th. Back in June, KBOO's Althea Billings interviewed freelance reporter Aurora Biggers about her coverage of the stripper strike. Here's part of their conversation.
Matta Tavern opened back in November 2022, and pretty quickly after that, dancers say that they realized that there were a lot of significant security and safety issues in the club. Chiefly, workers were concerned that when the club opened, there weren't any cameras inside. And it's an industry standard to have cameras inside the club, so that was something that workers were immediately concerned about. There are now cameras inside the club currently, but they're not all in all the places dancers feel that they need to be. There was also a concern around security. The club, when it opened, had one security guard. That security guard, though, often also worked as the DJ or the cook. When talking to some of the dancers, you know, one said, how can you be protecting your girls when you're making a burger? So those are some of the main concerns that they had, as well as other behaviors from management that workers did not feel were appropriate in the workplace. But security concerns are definitely the main thing that they are trying to address through their current campaign.
Well, yeah, to that point, what are their demands and as a part of this unionization effort?
You know, when they went on strike a few days before they actually decided to start working with the union, which is Actors Equity. And at that time, they were going on strike because they wanted to demand a few different things from the club, including an official contract with the club. They also wanted to have a dedicated booking manager, an appropriate amount of adequately trained security, and they also wanted some physical safety issues fixed. So when the club opened, the dancers also said that the flooring and the pole weren't properly installed, which is a massive physical safety issue, especially when you're working in 6 to 9 inch heels on a dance floor and, you know, doing athletics. That's something that's not very safe. They're also looking to have a more equitable environment for queer dancers and dancers of color, and we'll also be bringing up things like wages and scheduling as well.
That was freelance reporter Aurora Biggers speaking with KBOO's Althea Billings about the Magic Tavern strike back in June. After their union certifies the election, they will begin the bargaining process for their first contract on behalf of the strippers. Magic Tavern has remained open since, with non-striking dancers on stage. They've called the allegations of dangerous working conditions, quote, false accusation and defamatory statements, end quote, in an online post in August.
Races grow increasingly nationalized. Military leaders say a senator's hold on personnel puts our national security at risk. And Wisconsin Republicans aim to impeach a new state Supreme Court justice. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
You want people representing us as a nation who are in line with your beliefs, whether or not they're representing your interests specifically or your district specifically.
Sarah Briner with Open Secrets says all politics is local, but increasingly all local politics is national. Social media and polarization are drawing national attention and boosting candidates' ability to fundraise from out-of-state donors. Briner says just half the donations made to Senate candidates come from their states, with only a little more than that for House contenders. A new CNN poll is bad news for the White House. President Joe Biden's approval rating dropped below 40% for the first time this year. Recent head-to-head polls show Biden basically tied with former President Donald Trump, but former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley is pointing out this new survey shows her as the only Republican beating the president.
I think he thought it'd be cute to stick with the Bidenomics. But the reality is, if you want to bring down inflation, there's a couple of things that will do it. Stop the spending.
Top brass are calling on Alabama Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville to end his months-long hold on hundreds of military appointments. Secretary of the Air Force Frank Kendall says the senator's objection to the military's abortion policy is impacting national security.
Our potential adversaries are paying attention to this and is affecting how they view the United States and our military capabilities and support for the military. This needs to stop.
Secretary of the Army Christine Wormuth says Tuberville's opposition to any nominees who support diversity and equity programs will impact military recruitment.
You know, it is taking our apolitical military institution, that's a core principle of our constitutional democracy, and eroding its foundation.
Three of the six military services are now without Senate-confirmed leaders for the first time in history. Tuberville has repeatedly said he's not budging. Wisconsin Republicans are looking to impeach a newly elected state Supreme Court justice over donations she got from the Democratic Party. Democratic State Representative Greta Neubauer says Republicans didn't mind when their party donated to the court's conservative judges.
Every legislator must look in the mirror and ask whether they are willing to erase the votes of over a million Wisconsinites, including their own constituents.
Justice Janet Protasiewicz won in a landslide and gave liberals a court majority for the first time in a decade and a half. That's boosting Democrats' hopes of overturning the state's abortion ban and gerrymandered legislative maps, which could weaken the legislature's GOP majority. U.S. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh told a judicial conference Thursday he hopes there will be concrete steps soon on the court's ethics concerns, but he stopped short of endorsing an official code of conduct. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. It's 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. That is 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be clear, with a low of 52 degrees and wind gusts up to 11 miles per hour. Tomorrow's weather will be warm and sunny, with a high of 85 degrees. Today in history, in 1974, President Gerald Ford signs the pardon of Richard Nixon for any crimes he may have committed while in office. The quote of the day is from American singer Patsy Cline, who died this day in 1963. She said, "Music is something that should go right through you. Leave some of itself behind in your soul so that you can never quite be the same again."
The Montana Arts Council selects Chris Latray from Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa as their poet laureate. With that story and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas from KMBA in Anchorage, Alaska, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Montana Arts Council recently announced the state's new poet laureate. Yellowstone Public Radio's Orlinda Worthington introduces us to Chris Latray, who was the state's 11th poet laureate and a member of a Montana tribe.
Uju, Ndinwaywaginadog, and me, that is hello, all of my relatives. We are all related, and that is where my inspiration comes from, the relationship we have with everything around us, human and non-human. Absolutely, that is it.
Chris Latray is a member of the Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa. He says his priority as poet laureate will be getting to small rural communities that may be overlooked when it comes to writing and poetry.
If I had to focus on one thing, it's to get the word to these young people that you can choose a path like mine and be successful in ways different from maybe how people tell you you need to proceed.
He says, like many of us, he grew up with the idea that poetry is just a bunch of fancy words, a misconception he hopes to change.
You know, when I speak to kids, I tell them that their story is 100% unique, and there is nobody who is experiencing the world the way they are. And the importance of them sharing that story through any kinds of words on the page or orally, that is important. And however you choose to frame that with words is poetry. Your life is poetry.
For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Orlinda Worthington. Mother Angela Gonzalez and daughter Ermelina Gonzalez of Anchorage, Alaska, posted their doll titled Fish Camp Barbie, which features an Athabascan Barbie doll dressed in traditional clothing. The Barbie movie premiered just 6 days before the doll went viral and has gained nearly 100,000 views on Twitter and TikTok. KNOM's Ava White reports.
In this scene, a Barbie doll proudly wears a vibrant hot pink cusbuck, complemented by a beaded necklace, stylish moose hide cuffs, and headband. Positioned on a nearby table is a fish made from salmon skin aligned with beadwork. Barbie is holding an ulu, ready to skillfully prepare her fish. All clothing was handmade by Ermelina Gonzalez. Angela Gonzalez's family's fish camp was located along the Koyukuk River, where her family frequented when she was a young girl. She has played with Barbie since she was a little kid and says that her grandmother used to make accessories for her dolls.
You know, all the dolls need to have their little ulu, and we would have like a little fish camp theme. with the track.
Angela Gonzalez explains the importance of sharing culture towards younger generations and why it's important for Alaska Native children to feel equally represented.
Good that they will be able to see themselves represented, even though it's not for mass market or anything like that, and that they can be inspired to create what they want to create. You know, maybe they can make a fishnet or a dip net, you know, just something that can inspire them.
Barbie has a reputation for embracing numerous roles, ranging from a CEO to a gymnast, a construction worker, and now a skilled fisherwoman at a subsistence camp. Through the innovative creation of their own Barbie scenes, Angela and Ermelina Gonzalez have succeeded in fashioning a compelling narrative focused on culture. Their efforts serve as an inspiring testament for young girls across various Alaska Native cultures, conveying the powerful message that they too can embody the spirit of Barbie in their own unique ways. Reporting from Nome, Alaska, I'm Ava White.
I'm Jill Freitas.
Anti-LGBTQ news has an impact on LGBTQ-identifying youth, as demonstrated in the latest Trevor Project survey. It surveyed 28,000 youth. One-third reported poor mental health much or all of the time related to these policies. Parents and guardians can take steps to help keep their LGBTQ youth from focusing too much on news that troubles them. Deborah Van Fleet has more from Nebraska.
LGBTQ youth in Nebraska and across the country are exposed to a steady stream of news about anti-LGBTQ policies and legislation, and many say it's affecting their well-being. Nearly one-third of the 28,000 who responded to the latest Trevor Project survey of LGBTQ young people reported having poor mental health most or all of the time because of anti-LGBTQ proposals and actions. Clinical psychologist Allison DeLisa, who teaches at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, specializes in working with these young people. She says it's no surprise that they are affected by all the negative policy coverage.
Whether they are a young person or an adult, those are news stories about a group to which they belong and have a direct and a true impact on them. These things impact how they can move through the world.
This year alone, over 200 anti-trans bills and over 500 anti-LGBTQ bills were introduced in state legislatures, including Nebraska's controversial LB 574, banning gender-affirming medical care to minors. And Governor Jim Pillen signed an executive order, quote, declaring the biological definition of male and female, unquote. Stressing the cumulative effect these reports can have, DeLisa encourages parents to teach their LGBTQ loved ones to step away from the news cycle and to keep a close eye on their well-being. Also in the Trevor Project survey, a majority said they'd been bullied at school because of their orientation. DeLisa points out that social media can make troubling stories and comments hard to ignore.
It's not just that, hey, I saw the story in the World Herald, but then my friends were tweeting about it, and then another person posted this thing on Instagram, and another person made a TikTok about it. It's everywhere.
She sometimes tells young people she works with to avoid content they find upsetting on particular platforms, especially since algorithms will keep sending them more and more about those topics.
So I'll say, you know what? On your TikTok, you don't need to follow stuff about what's going on in the news. If your TikTok needs to be makeup videos and puppy dogs, go for it.
In the survey, 56% who wanted mental health care in the previous year said they were unable to get it, and 41% said they'd seriously considered suicide. DeLisa says loss of interest in things they enjoy all can be signs a young person may need professional help. She says the family doctor is a good place to start. The National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is 988. For Nebraska News Connection, I'm Deborah Van Fleet.
An environmental watchdog group claims EPA funding cuts sought by House Republicans in the 2024 federal budget would jeopardize plans to cut toxic chemicals known as PFAS from the water systems of 26 million Americans. Mark Richardson reports from Illinois.
Environmental groups say a proposal to cut $4 billion from the Environmental Protection Agency budget would gut the regulations designed to clean up toxic chemicals from public water systems in Illinois and across the country. A group of House Republicans is demanding the cuts in exchange for their votes to keep the government from shutting down later this month. They would jeopardize federal plans to eliminate forever chemicals known as PFAS found in the U.S. water supply. Betsy Sutherland, a former EPA staffer who worked on water issues, says this isn't the time to play politics with cleaning up the environment.
Budget cuts will have real consequences for EPA's ability to protect human health and the environment, not just from PFAS, but from every environmental threat our country is facing.
These chemicals are among the most persistent toxic compounds in existence, contaminating everything from drinking water to food, packaging, and personal care products. And they never break down in the environment. Illinois ranks in the middle of the pack for the level of PFAS in the state. Neighboring Michigan has among the highest rates in the country. The bill in the House Appropriations Committee, which funds the EPA, proposes cutting the agency's budget by more than one-third in fiscal year 2024. Sutherland says if the measure is approved, EPA funding would plummet to levels unseen in three decades.
The cuts are incredibly short-sighted. 2 weeks ago, EPA released PFAS monitoring data for 2,000 drinking water systems that show multiple PFAS chemicals are in the drinking water of over 26 million people.
John Reeder with the Environmental Working Group says most PFAS emanate from the air emissions of industrial plants. He says the group's federal PFAS report card found these chemicals in all 50 states, but industrial regions like the upper Midwest had the most sites.
We hope that Congress is listening. Budget cuts for EPA, as well as DOD's cleanup program, have real consequences and would likely delay protection for millions of people exposed to PFAS, including many environmental justice communities.
I'm Mark Richardson for Illinois News Connection.
The Seattle City Council is considering implementing standards that reduce building emissions to zero by 2050. But climate groups say the city needs to act faster to get the policy passed. Eric Tegedoff has the details.
The wait to curb emissions from Seattle buildings has gone on long enough, climate groups say. The Seattle City Council is considering building emissions performance standards, which would require the city's biggest buildings to cut their climate pollution completely by 2045. Apartments would have a 2050 deadline. Jess Wallach with 350 Seattle says buildings are the second largest source of carbon emissions in the city, but this policy has been delayed and watered down over the past 2 years.
This is an opportunity to ensure that the biggest buildings in Seattle, which are by and large owned by wealthy corporations and real estate giants, are on track for a just transition to move their buildings off of fossil fuels and onto Seattle's clean energy grid.
350 Seattle recently released a report that found almost none of the largest buildings in Seattle are owned by individuals or families, and that about half are owned by private entities based outside the city. Building owners say the plan is too costly. Wallach says the city council was going to vote on the standards in September, but has delayed it, likely until the beginning of next year. Deepa Sivarajan is the Washington local policy manager for climate solutions. She says Seattle is facing increased threats from climate change, including hotter summers, and notes that transitioning away from fossil fuel use will help the city build climate resiliency and lower utility costs.
So many of our buildings are not air conditioned in Seattle, and electric heat pumps, which are the most cost-effective and energy-efficient solution when you're switching over from a fossil fuel to electricity, they provide heating and cooling together.
Washington State has passed its own energy efficiency standard for buildings. But Wallach says rather than duplicating those rules, Seattle's standards would increase their effectiveness.
Seattle's policy is going to help ensure that the state-level policy is not only implemented here, but actually goes further and faster and more successfully, and in that way we can be a model for other cities around Washington.
The building emissions performance standards would reduce Seattle building emissions 27% by 2050, according to the city. This is Eric Tegedoff for Washington News Service.
A Serbian basketball player had his kidney removed after getting hit in the abdomen in the FIBA Basketball World Cup. The start of the NFL season is here, and there are many new things to look forward to. And finally, Joe Burrow gets paid. With KBOO Sports News, here's Grant Button.
Serbian basketball player Borisa Simanic had a kidney removed after taking a shot to the abdomen. This happened during the FIBA Basketball World Cup when Serbia was playing against South Sudan last Wednesday. After the incident, he left the game and had surgery that night. However, there were complications with the surgery, resulting in doctors removing the entirety of his injured kidney last weekend. After his two operations, Simanic texted one of his Serbian teammates words of encouragement. He said, quote, "Hey guys, I'm all right. After two surgeries, I'm all right. I'm healthy. Just get the win. Don't think about me and let's win tonight," end quote. Talk about a punch in the gut. On a slightly more uplifting note, the NFL started back up yesterday with the Detroit Lions upsetting the reigning Super Bowl champs and the Chiefs. Some noteworthy things to watch out for this season include the 14 playoff rematches on the 2023 schedule, the most in a season in NFL history, the increase of playing international games, primarily in London, players for the first time since 1972 wearing the number zero, and kick returns hardly existing anymore. Also of note are new helmets for quarterbacks designed to minimize concussions, and that the Super Bowl will be hosted in Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. How exciting! You know who's also excited about the start of the NFL season? Superstar quarterback Joe Burrow, who yesterday signed a mammoth contract with the Cincinnati Bengals at $275 million over a five-year span. This is the largest contract in NFL history. This solidifies Burrow, who is 26, as the Bengals' QB of the future, having helped Cincinnati win five playoff games in three seasons. That's the same amount of playoff wins that the Bengals won in franchise history prior to drafting him. Congrats to Burrow. For KBOO Sports News, I'm Grant Bunn.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 8th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Grant Button. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Laura Miller. Special thanks to Eric Tegetoff, Mark Richardson, Jill Freitas, Alex Gonzalez, and Edwin J. Vieira. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Alex Solomon. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.